meeting to order.
Cindy, where do you want to start? I do. We have minutes to review from both February 11th and March 1st. You should have copies on your in your station area there.
Motion to approve minutes of February 11th and March 1st, 2010.
Second.
Motion by Dave, second by Danny. Any more discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries. All right. The next thing on the agenda is the Sword Ministries that was tabled on 2011. How about February 11th? How did we leave it, Cindy?
We tabled it.
Would you take that microphone, and we're going to shift microphones so we can hear you?
Like this one?
Yeah.
You guys will share that one. And we'll share this one.
Kelly made a motion to table that to do some more research.
Well, I guess. There's all of 10 people in here. Do we really need microphones, or is that for a recording?
Internet. Internet and recording.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So how do we want to bring this up? I mean, I think part of the reason we had tabled it was trying to get a policy together, but then we are still debating, do we hear the case or not? Is that
yes.
correct? That was the debate of this conversation.
And this is real estate exemption issue.
Real estate
so
exemption.
It's not anything with the policy.
That's right. And
Kelly, I guess, would be the person to ask if he was the one that asked, he was the one that made the motion for the research.
Well, there was a big discussion about whether this should be within the policy and about some other things. And I don't remember exactly what the issue was. But no one seemed to be in the mood to really make a decision on it at that time. And the question was, do we hear it?
Right.
And, you know, my feeling is, yeah, I think we should. But I'm not sure that I can really make an argument as to why.
Okay.
Is this 2008 or 2009?
Can you bring it back up and refresh our memory of what the request is?
I don't have the letter from last time. I have
it upstairs.
Yeah,
that's right.
They've always been exempt.
Okay.
They, as a matter of fact, they came before BOE 2008 in the fall, and it was exempted.
For 2007?
No, for 2008.
Okay.
And then when they got their tax bill for 2009, they were out of the country, and so that's why they did not respond until January 25th, I think.
And Bob, what's your legal... go ahead and just refresh our memory here. We had a lot of discussions since then, so.
Okay. Obviously, you have to exhaust your administrative remedies. If you don't like the way you're assessed and you get a notice, you have to appeal to the summer BOE. The law says that a bill is, in fact, notice, so if you pay your bill or your bill, you've received your bill, and your bill was due, and you didn't pay it, you received notice. And you have to exhaust your administrative remedies, and your administrative remedies are, if you know about it prior to summer BOE, that you do it in summer BOE. But if you find out subsequent to summer BOE, but prior to the 31st, when you pay your bill, you pay under protest. That is the proper procedure under the law.
Okay.
And if you allow people to appeal after the 31st, then you're kind of opening up the door.
My question is why, if it was exempt for 10 years, as is stated here, why was it changed all of a sudden?
I think that's a question that would have to be made if we decided to hear the case.
Mr. Assessor, can you tell us how, if he was exempt for all those years and then...
Can we go ahead and hear the case to Kelly's point?
Yeah,
well,
I mean, that's a question.
My question is, though, if it's a mistake in the assessor's office, then we shouldn't hear it. If there's a good reason for it, then we have to decide whether to hear it or not. So I would like to know.
You should determine whether to hear it or not, because once you hear it, whatever you do is appealable. You have opened it up for a hearing.
Okay. So
I move that we hear the case.
We have a motion from Kelly to hear the case.
Second motion.
Chuck has seconded the motion.
Can there be some discussion?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
everybody getting their fair shake on what we do. I am concerned about the statement that their attorney made about opening the door for everybody else. Am I receiving the statement right?
I think you can't play favorites. You can't say, well, this one we believe and this one we don't. So we'll hear this one, but we won't hear this one.
I'm
not sure that that's what we're saying.
That's
what you say when you hear the case. As I understand it, the issue of whether we hear whether it is exempt or not has to do with whether the guy went through the process and got goobered up in the process somehow and missed some sort of deadline or something and has to accept whatever mistake or ruling or whatever it is the assessor.
When you hear the case that you're going to either make a decision to deny or to approve.
You wouldn't hear
a case that no matter what you're going to deny. So there's an implication by hearing a case that you may approve
that we entertain the idea of maybe approving.
And if you approve one, then you have to hear everyone.
Anybody that comes before us the previous year.
I think that's the point that needs to be remembered when you say that, Bob, is someone that comes before us. And we've battled this a number of years, and I've heard the concern that we're going to have to hear everybody, meaning everybody's going to come, but that's not been the case.
Right.
And the numbers have been very small.
Well, I question whether you have the authority, actually, to hear cases after the first of the year. There is a statute which... Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. If I start hearing testimony, then we were hearing the case and we can't hear the case. That's what we're debating, if we hear the case or not. So...
So what if we do hear everybody? If there's been some sort of mistake made, we can decide when we hear the case whether their case is merited or not.
That's what I was going to say. This new statute, which, as you know, I'm not real fond of.
No one is thrilled.
The county commission, when there's governmental error, can do something to interest, penalties, and taxes. If there's some sort of governmental error here, maybe that's the way to go. However, BOE...
Is BOE the one to decide whether there's been a governmental error? Statute speaks to the commission, not to BOE.
BOE decides issues of assessment, okay? But usually that's in summer BOE, unless they didn't get notice. They decide issues of classification. They decide issues of exemption. However, those decisions should and I think have to be made prior to December 31st of the year in which those taxes are due. Once the taxes are due and payable and they've been paid, I don't know that you have the authority to go ahead and hear that case. And once the taxes are not paid and have been due, I don't know that you have the authority to hear that case. But I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just trying to...
What would be the legal ramifications of us hearing a case that we don't have the authority to hear?
In granting somebody an exemption, the legal what you're doing is, how do you say no to someone else who comes in and says, okay, I think the assessor got my value wrong. I didn't come in summer BOE, and I think you got the value wrong, so I want you to hear me too. And you'll never be done.
How many years do you go back?
You'll never be done.
Okay. Donna, what were you going to say?
Well, my question only is, in Cindy's statement, it was that the individuals didn't receive notice properly because they were out of the country. And even if they had received notice, how could they ever attend a Board of Equalization being out of the country?
Okay. A bill is considered a notice legally.
Well, again, that would have been in November. That would have been in November. And if their mail is going to internationally, it could take some time to get to them.
Yeah.
And they did respond by January and were not aware that it was changing from being exempt to being taxed.
But they can pay their tax under protest by the 31st of the year. All they have to do is write a statement for the collector that they're paying this under protest because they believe that they're exempt.
Okay.
And I don't know whether that was done in this case or not.
Can that be done in January or February?
No.
Okay. They didn't, since they've always been exempt, they were out of the country. The bill was sent to their address, but they had no idea that there was even a bill there because they'd always been exempt. So they had no chance to write a letter before that or pay their taxes. They had no reason to come in and pay taxes.
It seems like we're starting to debate the issue versus making the decision. We're going to hear it.
No,
so
I don't know that we're debating the issue. We're debating whether they actually had notice.
That's part of the issue.
No, that's not part of the issue. The issue is...
No,
the issue is, are they exempt?
No. The issue is, are we going to hear the case or not?
Okay, well, that's what I mean. Are we going to hear the case or not has something to do with whether these people were abused by the process. The process was... this is a case where the process was obviously working against these people. And...
You could argue both sides of this.
Well, you can argue that you have a duty to be diligent when the government sends you a letter on something, but just because, and I'll disagree with Bob on one thing, just mailing a notice to somebody is not notice. Them receiving the notice is notice. And if they were out of the country, they may not have received it in a timely fashion, in which case I question, did they actually get notice?
There are new Supreme Court cases that, as you say, require more notice than in the past. However, under the case law in Missouri, you're held to know that you have property and that taxes are due. I understand that this situation...
Well, there's potential for taxes.
Yeah.
Dave, are you ready to vote? All right, I'm going to go ahead and call the motion to hear the case. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We'll hear the case. All right. So we will start with the, is it Pastor Hunter?
Yes.
If you want to come to the microphone and we'll start the process here. Go ahead.
Well, we've been exempt, like you said, for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
But initially when we got exemption, just so you know, in 2000, we went through a massive battle. With James.
Okay.
We had to get lawyers. It was a very tough battle. Their argument was because I do a pastor church and I'm an evangelist. And so they went through this whole process of Billy Graham's thing, and it was a nightmare. And so when we came back to this, and we never received no notification last year. They did come to the building in 2008. When they came to the building in 2008, one of our church members was there and even invited whoever came from the office over here, the assessor's office, to church. And then in November, I went to do a mission trip in Brazil for several weeks, and we went on the road 2 weeks. So we were gone from about November the 15th through December the 15th. I was in Brazil doing revivals, evangelism. My wife was at the church just for about a week or two, and then we met on the road when I came back. We went on the road together for a couple of weeks. So when we got the notice from the office that they're trying to tax us, we have no employees in the office right now. We went through a shift with the ministry. So when we got the paperwork, it was, by the time my wife got it, was December. So she immediately called. Mm-hmm. She called right after we got back because we got back from Brazil and then we went to Florida. I think after that, Kansas City, had to do a revival in a church there and then came back and then got the notice. So it was like the only time we could respond is when we got back, and we called right away when we got back to try work on the process to find out what's happening, you know.
Okay.
Because I know when we do our vehicles, like our ministry vehicle,
mm-hmm.
it's just tax exempt. You know, you go in tax exempt when the ministry buys a vehicle, and it's never questioned.
I was just going to say, I think we've already decided that, yeah, you've been through the process and we're hearing the case. Why exactly is it that you believe that this property should be exempt? That's the question that's before us now. Is that
our whole ministry has been exempt for like 10 years. We have the church there.
You're saying because it's been exempt in the past, it should be exempt now.
Well, it's still exempt.
We're
still a church. We're still 501c3. We still have church twice a week. And we still have evangelistic organization that runs out of the church.
Okay. Why don't we ask James, why don't you kind of tell us what was the process to switch him from exempt to non-exempt?
As we would go by the place, and basically, it's in a shopping center there, so we check all the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
reassessment process.
Is it a zero lot line building with that shopping center, or is it the whole shopping center?
It's the whole building, because it's kind of separated by a breezeway.
It is. All right, so just the part that we're talking about
on the far
is just the church. They don't rent it out for other businesses and stuff.
Right.
Okay.
But in the process of the exemption they received 10 years ago, and we've been going by, it was based on that being a church. At the time, there was an argument. There was an apartment downstairs that was being rented, and there's a huge warehouse there used for just shipping, nothing to do with church. In the process of this 10 years, we've had huge cases such as Assemblies of God cases where a percentage was used to tax a church versus non-church, basically. We percentaged things. Mm-hmm. We've had two or three cases that way. So in the process, when my gentlemen go by there, they say, this don't appear to be a church as per se it has in the past. So that's when the question arose. There's an apartment downstairs, there's a sales office inside, and there's a warehouse. So we put the property exemption off because we assumed that there wasn't, as far as church-related going on there, probably 25% or less. It wasn't a basic 100% church facility.
Okay.
Same argument that was made in 2000, but had more appearances of, I believe, the gentleman and his wife lived in the downstairs, and they have a house somewhere else, and there was no renting of an apartment back in 2000.
The apartment is still used as a domicile.
Most all the information that he's saying to you right there, every one of it is totally incorrect.
Okay.
I'm a pastor. I don't lie. That's the truth.
Okay.
The warehouse, if you go to our warehouse, and in that you'll see crates of books, because right now we're getting ready. We shipped almost 70,000 books to Togo, Ghana, Nigeria for evangelistic purposes. So the warehouse, we ship ministry material in and out there. If you open up the warehouse door right now, you'll see a crate getting ready to go to Togo. Those crates take, what? We give those books away as a donation. So the warehouse is used for that activity, to store. We have also sound equipment in the warehouse. The sound equipment in the warehouse is used for crusades. Mm-hmm. When we do evangelistic meetings, you go on the road, you rent a hall, you put all the sound equipment in the hall, you have to store that sound equipment. That is sound equipment for doing evangelistic meetings is in that warehouse. The apartment has we've always either had people volunteering for the ministry. Sometimes the apartment downstairs has been empty. Sometimes people who volunteer for the ministry work living in that apartment. And that's what we've had over the years. Maybe once in a while, sometimes it's empty, sometimes someone volunteering is sleeping in the apartment, but they volunteer for the ministry. We've never paid anybody. Anybody who's ever used that apartment, because it's all under one bill, usually just sleeps in that apartment and they volunteer for the ministry. We've had people volunteer sleep there once in a while.
Okay.
And the rest of the building is used for my ministry offices, my office, the other office, and then the floor that we do the church on, basically the main floor when you come into the entrance. And that's about all. And right now for the last... for the last 9 months, Pastor Bob Lilly, another pastor, has basically been using the church for free in one sense. He gives me some money towards electric, a couple hundred dollars a month. He helps me towards the electric, but I've let him use the church for free because he's also a 501c, and the building that he was using, he had financial problems and he needed a place to. So he does Sunday night and Wednesday, and he has about 50, 60 people. Okay. The other thing that might be an issue that he thought about was last year, November, we had a massive church split, so about half the people in our church left. So about once or twice this year, there's another guy who has a church around the corner, Hutchinson or the Freedom Seekers.
Okay.
And we have taken the whole church before on a Sunday morning and gone over and connected with him and had a service. I think twice we took the whole church with us this last year, so twice this year. We still do like a ministry training on Thursday nights. Pastor Bob does Sunday nights and Wednesday.
Okay.
And then I still run my ministry offices in there. I have an office upstairs. And then on twice this last year, on a Sunday morning, we took the whole church, about 30, 40 people, with us over to another church and joined them because I was preaching there.
Okay.
And it was right in Branson, so it wasn't that far.
Okay.
So that's the...
James, let me get one question. Yeah. James, you were talking about you thought your assessment was about 25% was church-related. So did the bill reflect...
No, we put it on as 100%. Took the exemption, but no.
They were billed at...
I have a question for Bob.
You're up next. Go ahead, Kelly.
I have a question for Bob.
What exactly does the statute say as to, and what does the case law speak to as to what kind of church activities define whether real estate is church-related or not?
Okay.
For example, do we tax church parsonages and that kind of property?
I laugh because I was on the other side of James on some church parsonage litigation, but it says that it's exclusively used for worship purposes. What does exclusive mean? The last time I told you that there's different meanings of what exclusive means, but it means that it should be used at least predominantly, if not completely and only, for worship purposes. If you start getting
someone going in praying to God and that kind of stuff,
right?
All right.
Well, you asked about parsonages. Parsonages were being taxed, and I understand where James was going because you know you might have three or four parsonages, and a church doesn't necessarily have three or four preachers, and they're often subdivisions. But certainly, if they're located on the same premises, and you hold Sunday school or a prayer meeting once a week in the parsonage, it's probably going to be exempt. The church itself is exempt if its predominant use is for, and they use the words in the statute exclusively for worship purposes. If their predominant use is religious worship, and when I say predominant, and there's an absence of commercial activity or more residential activity, if the predominant use is worship purposes, then worship related.
That leaves us to just consider what portion of his enterprise is worship purposes. I mean, do you consider just housing people assembling for the purposes of worship being the extent of worship purposes or just worship? Because his ministry obviously transcends his little piece of real estate.
It can get down to a factual basis. I mean, if I have a church building and I go in on Wednesday nights and have a dinner and Wednesday night classes, and then I go in on Sunday and I have Sunday school classes and worship, and that's the only two times a week it's used, even though it's only used twice a week, that's exclusively for worship purposes.
Right.
But what if I do that on Wednesday and Sunday, and then Monday through Friday in the week, I'm running a store out of there? I would say that that's a commercial use, and it's not exclusively used, even though you use that store for worship purposes. How's that different than, say, the grocery store that allows a church to meet in its grocery store?
Hold your thought there. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, James. So I understand what you said. This was due to reassessment.
Right.
Okay. Was a notice sent out in April then?
It was not.
I mean, if it was reassessed...
Right.
Shouldn't there have been a notice sent out in April?
That was a mistake on our part because of the IS department, when they pulled the exempt letter, did not get them over on the increase notice letter.
Okay. All right. Well, I know that we did...
Well, this is backing up on the issue. So the only notice this guy got was something in November that he had to respond to by the end of the year?
Yeah. But that in itself is not the issue.
We have
people that receive letters that are out of the country. We receive letters back. Donna has information. They may be out of state. We receive that all the time through the BOE when we have summer BOE. That's the reason I placed my vote not to hear this case, was because those kind of situations come forward all the time. With people living out of state, the bill is sent to their residents here, and they do not receive they come in and say they didn't receive notice, and the bill is sent. So that whole part of it has nothing to do with the exemption. We're to the exemption part now.
Well, that's why I say I was backing up. I didn't really need to get into
right.
Yes, sir.
The worship. Bringing up the worship thing, that was the very legality thing that was brought up 10 years ago and became a very big, it was very ugly in the meeting, if you look up the meeting, because what they did is they said Billy Graham does not have a church on his property, and Billy Graham's entire ministry, property, buildings, all that are exempt. And he doesn't worship on that property. He's an evangelistic organization with no church, and every building he uses on that property was exempt, and that was the big legal issue brought up. And it was based on that and actually several other cases. that they said, no, it has to be exempt, and then they voted that the ministry was exempt, even if we didn't have a church. It was, the other thing is we can also get our house. According to law right now, if we wanted to, we can turn our whole house into a parsonage and not pay tax on our house. But we do pay tax on the house that we live in right now. But if we want to, we can make the house tax exempt as well, because we can say that's a parsonage because I'm a pastor and I travel. We can do that. That's another right that we do have.
Okay.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, the question sounds to me like is, are the activities conducted on this property considered to be, what words do you use, worship?
Exclusively used for worship purposes, and I can see how Billy Graham's grounds, where everything is used to go and have people worship in stadiums, would be exclusively used for worship purposes. Well, I don't necessarily agree on the residence being a church thing.
He's publishing and distributing religious materials for free,
that's right,
using the warehouse. Does that constitute a religious person? And if you're going to start, you know, cutting those hairs that fine, then you look at any church, you know, we should be taxing the church offices and the church school and the thrift shop and all that, but not the, you know, if, right, if we make that distinction here, we need to make that in all the churches in town.
All right, I'll entertain any motion.
Based on James's statement that they just went by and assumed it's not being used, I would like to make a motion that the assessor go back out and meet with the people where they can go inside and see what it's like instead of just from the outside, and in their opinion come back to us with a recommendation of what percentage of it is worship and what percentage of it is not.
All right. We have a motion. Do I have a second on that one?
I move that we go ahead.
Seeing none, that motion fails.
I move that we go ahead and exempt them.
We have a motion to exempt Sword Ministries.
I second it.
Seconded by Danny. Any more discussion? Looking. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. The exemption is in.
Thank you.
100%, yes.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thank you. All right. Our next point of discussion.
Can I make a quick statement before we go on?
Yes, sir.
I think it's tied to what we just did. We've been through this a number of times on hearing cases, and we had a 2-3 vote to not hear this case, I mean to hear the case, and we had a unanimous vote that the right thing to do was to make it exempt, because we did it. We all voted on it. And so I'd just like us to stick in the back of our mind this issue of hearing cases. And I'll argue again that the number of cases that come before us to hear like this are very small. And I'm hoping we'll get this personal property thing changed where we're not having to look at a bunch of them. So as far as time involved, I don't think it's a burden on the BOE for time-wise. Anyway, my point is, I wish we'd think about what just happened this morning when it comes to hearing another case down the road.
That doesn't have anything to do with Chuck, with us sitting in this meeting. We have summer BOE, and it was brought to our attention last year. The year before, we sat in here and had monthly BOE meetings, and it was finally made. We found out that we were wrong in doing so for hearing cases throughout the year. We would constantly be hearing BOE cases on a monthly or bi-monthly basis through the whole year, the entire year, because people will come in with every excuse feasible to get exempt. I didn't have anything, again, what these people brought forward as exempting their case, didn't have anything. I second to the motion to exempt. I did have a problem with hearing the case because it is not statutorily correct to hear the case, in my opinion, and what I can receive from the attorney. And so I don't want to sit and do county business illegally and hear cases year-round. And that's basically what we did 2 years ago. We heard BOE cases till the term was irritating.
But Danny, I saw the minutes for February of 08 last week, and we did not hear cases. We turned cases down. That's not exactly right. We didn't hear them all the time. We voted to not hear cases, just like the vote here.
That's yes, in February. But the year before, we heard them all year long. We heard them from after BOE was, which is set aside by statute in a government statute, that there's a time limit on it. But we heard those cases all year long. And I'm not going to break the law in doing so.
Danny, I think it was 2009, and yes, it did get unbearable. We were meeting sometimes once a week, sometimes twice a week, until the board came to the conclusion that they shouldn't be meeting that often. The issue I have is I don't think we need to discuss assessed valuation on properties at this time, but there are going to be exceptions for, like this was a good exception. I mean,
why is it a good exception, and why is there not another good exception?
It didn't have anything to do with valuation, that's why.
Because it's a church, it does not make it any different than any other charity or any other situation that's not an assessed value situation. They made the right decision exempting it if it had been held at an appropriate time. 100% right on their unanimous motion.
Chuck, do you have a comment?
Doesn't have anything to do with whether it's a church or it's a commercial thing. I'm not talking about this issue. My point that I wanted to and I don't need to dwell on long unless we want to. I'm fine to talk about it. My point is, this board feels like the assessment should not have been. It should have been exempt in this case, and we heard it. And we believe we did the right thing, or we wouldn't have voted for it. And for us to not hear some of these cases on the argument, it doesn't make sense that we don't hear something that's clearly appears to be a valid thing, and then when we do hear it this morning, it was valid.
But it's the law.
It's the law.
Hold on. Go ahead.
But we follow the law and we stand. We got to follow the law, and then we turn around in other cases and we don't follow the law, and it's okay there. So we need to be consistent.
The only point I was going to make is if this had been any other case having to do with a change in assessment or something like that, as I understand it, this guy would have got a change in assessment notice sometime earlier in the year, and then he would have got a tax bill. And in this case, the only notice this guy got was a tax bill in November they owed $2,000 in another 35 days or something. And regardless of the machinery of how the law works and how he could appeal it and all this kind of stuff, that looked to me like he was being put in a situation where it was potentially impractical for a reasonable person in his situation to have responded to something like that. And like I say, the process was working against him at that time. If the BOE is, as I understand it, BOE is supposed to be some way to relieve the process or relieve the burdens of process on people.
I understand and I agree with you. If you can make that argument that they didn't receive adequate notice, but he stood up there and said that he got the notice in December and yet didn't do anything until January.
There's a gray area there. But most of these cases, I think people are going to be getting their change of assessment notices in like April or May or something.
He couldn't have come before BOE. Not have come before summer BOE, period.
But he could have paid under protest is the point.
Thank you for hearing my point. I'd suggest we move on.
I was getting ready to propose something if we were going to be thinking toward a policy on this. There's got to be a legal cutoff somewhere, like you were saying.
It's December 31st.
There is a legal cutoff.
Let me make sure that for those listening, the reason I voted against this was because the legal notice to cutoff was the 31st.
Okay,
that was my reason for not hearing it, because in talking to Cape Girardeau County and Jackson County and all the other counties, we hear about 40 times more cases than any other county of our size and larger. And it's because our policy is no policy. we go by case versus using the 31st, which the statutes have established. So that's the entire reason why I voted the way I voted. Was it the right thing to do? Ultimately, yes. But once the decision to hear the case was on, let's fix the problem. But the administrative remedies were not exhausted. They should have paid under protest, and then there would have been a formal administrative remedy problem. That's why my concern is we shouldn't be hearing 400 cases during the summer BOE when other counties of much larger than us are hearing 20.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the reason I went the way I went.
The summer BOE is different.
In this situation, it is. But the problem is we're having multiple issues, and that's the thoughts. But I think we need to go ahead and talk about refund policy because I think it all kind of ties in together here.
Same thing.
I believe everyone should have received a copy from Sheila on other first-class counties. I believe you had sent it out to everybody, and I think if you don't, everyone should have a copy in front of them. So what we're going to do is kind of just walk through that process if we can and have some more dialogue. And I'll open it up for discussion from anyone. At all.
If we're going to follow the law, we need to know what the law says, but we cannot get a clear-cut explanation of what the law says because every statute seems to contradict another.
Yeah.
Amen. That's what we live with.
I would agree with that comment.
May I just get that part of it out of the way?
Yes, please.
Let you guys debate it?
Yes, please.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say that the BOE has a practical problem for which it needs a practical answer. You have people that go in and they've somehow gotten the wrong vehicle on there, and they've got to register the vehicle, and then they've got to come back, and they've got to get that corrected in order to be able to register their vehicle. So there's a practical problem, and there needs to be a practical answer. The Dillon Rule says that political subdivisions of the state have only those powers delegated to them by state statutes. It may be argued they also have those powers absolutely necessary to carry out those duties, other duties required of them by state statute. And the law abhors a vacuum, and there's definitely a vacuum here. I've looked at Sheila's stuff. I got it yesterday evening, and I've looked at it. I see that counties treat it in different ways. There's reference to 139.031, and 139.031 is really not all that applicable. It says that for any real or personal property tax mistakenly or erroneously levied against the taxpayer and collected in whole or in part by the collector, and that the application shall be filed within 3 years after the tax is mistakenly or erroneously paid. Well, somewhere here you did. I saw it. So the 3 years is 139.031. It has to do with erroneous levies or erroneous payments, and the courts have really trimmed that down to almost nothing. I mean, if you apply the wrong levy, it doesn't have to do with whether the taxpayer himself or herself put down the wrong vehicle.
Okay.
And it doesn't apply to the assessor making a mistake as to the vehicle. That's not an erroneous levy or an erroneous payment. However, it is an error. So that 3 years from 139.031 does not apply.
Okay.
The other statute that was referenced in here was 137.130, and the only thing I see in there that could possibly apply says that in the event personal property was also subject to taxation in the immediately preceding 3 years but was omitted, the assessor shall also list, assess, and cause taxes to be imposed upon such property. That's only if it was omitted.
So you can go back 3 years, basically, if it's been omitted.
Yeah. I suppose you could put on, if somebody says they had a 2004 Buick, okay, and they really had a 2003, you could say the 2003 was omitted and put that on under this statute, but I don't know that you could take the 2004 off.
I see what you're saying.
Okay. So there is a problem, and it needs to be resolved in a practical format, either by the BOE, where there is a mistake, there is that new statute that applies for the county commission. But most of these counties, as Sheila has pointed out, have some practical solution for the practical problem. And it involves the assessor and the collector working cooperatively together to solve the problem. When somebody comes in, they don't want to wait for BOE to meet. They don't want to wait for the county commission
right.
to meet. They need to register their vehicle that day.
Right.
So how are we going to solve that problem, and how are we going to do it in the most efficient way that at least we're trying to get legal, based on some
lawful format. And, you know, if you're with another county or with several other counties, at least you're in a good pack and you're not going to get attacked, probably. But if you're going to ask me what the lawful authority or the statutory authority is for it, I think there's a vacuum in the law.
Okay.
And that's all I have to say, and you guys can do whatever you want.
So I guess it seems like one of the biggest issues we have is, and it's not exclusively, but sometimes they may put the wrong year on, and it's a two-year tag, and then...
They don't discover it until another year has gone by.
Is that accurate, Donna or Cindy?
Well, we have a multiple of problems. So if we're talking about refunds specifically, it could be any number of reasons why there's a problem. They paid on the wrong year of the vehicle, and now they either paid too much because they said the vehicle was a 2007 when it was really a 2002. So then we need to refund the difference. Or in some cases, they put the complete wrong vehicle on there and didn't add their new vehicle. They sold it and didn't get that taken care of. So it's a multitude of problems that causes the issue. And generally, we know our taxpayers, they generally do not read their assessment information.
So let me ask you a different question. Based off of how we've voted over the last, mm-hmm. let's say, 12, 18, 2 years, mm-hmm. okay, what would be our policy?
Okay.
Knowing that it doesn't apply to everything.
This is what I think would make it the easiest for my office. If James writes an abatement to correct an old bill, they have a bill in here that's incorrect, he corrects it, there's no payment made. There's no reason we should have a meeting. James needs to write the correctment, we correct the textbook, remove the old bill, we have a bill for Sheila to collect on. It's ridiculous for you guys to be voting on it.
And this is with $0 involved?
$0 involved. There's no reason for you to ever vote on it because James has the right, in my opinion, to correct a personal property tax bill anytime a citizen comes before him prior to it being paid. And then we should correct it. If you don't like it, you want to go out and investigate, go investigate it. He still has the right to say that's what the personal property is.
So that's been our general rule. Go ahead, Chuck. You have comments about that?
Well, I was just going to say, can we kind of take this one step at a time? Can we see if the assessor and the collector agree with that? Would work that way?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I'm trying to break it down in different groups. Exactly. Would that, I mean, you write the abatement anyway right now, James, correct?
Right.
Okay.
It's not a problem to me. I'm not going to get involved with it. And I'm pretty upset right now, and I don't need to be making decisions.
Okay.
You let a taxpayer step in here and said I wasn't telling the truth right into the documents.
Okay. Dave?
Well, I agree with what Donna is saying. On that particular part, at least, when a taxpayer comes in that has not paid their taxes for 1 year and it's the second year and they got to go get their car and it's wrong, you know, there's no tax difference. I mean, when they come in, if we correct it, then there's no refund because they hadn't paid it, so
right.
It's not a refund to mess with. If it's undertaxed, we make the new bill at the higher amount, and they have to pay that if they want their license.
Right. I mean, he corrects it no matter what.
So there should not be.
So for $0 refund, Sheila.
I mean, that's just a simple correction.
Sheila, do you have thoughts? Is that all right? I mean.
If you have an unpaid bill and you find out that it's wrong, correct it. Get your correct bill in there, and the taxpayer is going to pay the correct bill. And that unpaid bill is not going to be laying in there, a chance for them to pay the wrong bill.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're in favor that. Okay, so that's one...
On unpaid bills.
On unpaid, no refund. Okay, so I've written that down, and that seems like the majority were saying that we agree with that.
May I make a suggestion?
You may make a suggestion.
We have a new statute.
I'm sorry.
We have a new statute, 52-240, and it says that any taxpayer claiming that the county made an error or omission in determining taxes owed may submit a written request for a refund of penalties, interest, or taxes to the county commissioner governing body of the county. Now, that would require an error by the government, okay? In that situation, any refund for the wrong vehicle that was the fault of the government could simply be submitted to the county commission by the assessor, collector, whatever, and you guys could say, okay, governmental error, here's your refund.
Okay, so this is governmental error.
But you're kind of were you okay with the first step? I think we got through the first one. You're talking about...
Yeah, he was fine with the first step because he didn't say...
I didn't know you came right at the end.
Yeah, he's,
don't ask me for the lawful authority for it, but it needs to be handled practically.
Okay, so there...
So you're saying if... Go ahead.
So for the zero refund, I think we're all in agreement for that.
And we're talking personal property...
Correct.
...only, not real estate.
Correct.
And we're talking about... For those, they would not have to come before BOE. Correct.
Correct. $0 refund, just fix the bill,
fix it,
route it through the system. And
that's the way a lot of counties do it. Some of them
that's
then,
all we're talking about right now.
Yeah, and some of them then take it before BOE and get a vote. I don't see any reason to do that because it does tell us to correct the tax books.
Okay. Now, Sheila, do you have something about that?
Yes.
Okay.
We collect 3 years' personal property. And the assessor's office has all the documentation on whether it's whether they owned it on that year because of the state tax, because of the Department of Revenue database. Now we need to go. That should be on all those 3 years. If it's an incorrect bill that's in the system, then it needs to be corrected for those 3 years. The reason is the collector has to collect the most delinquent year, and you got to...
She's charged with it. So if the assessor doesn't fix the books, somebody has to fix the books. That's why it takes cooperation between the assessor and the collector. If they're not on the same page, somebody else has to order that the books be
so
corrected.
So we have to go back 3 years, up to 3 years on this policy, on this part of the policy.
And they'll have documentation, and they'll make that.
Okay. So up
we won't do anything unless James's office attaches documentation.
Okay, up to 3 years. Okay. On governmental error... Basically, I believe abatement should be written and the refund comes from the county commission, it sounds like.
Well, they make the vote that they do get the refund of the taxes.
The commission does.
Well, they can under 52240. I see it specifically here. It says any taxpayer claiming that the county made an error or omission in determining taxes owed may submit a written request for a refund of penalties, interest, or taxes to the county commission or governing body of the county. So obviously, you can do that. Of course, they may limit the definition of those things, but at least right now, with it undefined, you can do that as a
under
county commission.
Under 52240, government error, the commission refunds interest, penalties, and taxes possibly for governmental error on refunds.
That's right. Getting into another thing than what we already...
Right. That's separate above that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought we were still addressing that. I thought
Sheila
was still...
No, she was...
So basically, if James agrees to write a refund... Based on stating that as a governmental error, and James agrees to write the refund, we bring it before the commission.
Correct.
And they make the decision. The only flaw that's going to occur than that, there are going to be incidents where James does not agree, and that's going to be need to be addressed. That may be the one exception to that that has
so
to
be a BOE for that.
Well, where it's not governmental error, or
James
says
James
it's not
says
governmental
error.
Yeah, if the assessor feels like it's not governmental error, would
and
that
the taxpayer does.
And the taxpayer does that taxpayer come to before BOE or before the commission?
It says in the statute saying, Bob, that commission. They should come before the commission?
Well, if it's governmental error. And they can come before
error.
The commission.
It sounds like you go to BOE to determine whether it's a governmental error, and then the commission decides whether to give the money back or not.
But the statute's not clear. I mean, it doesn't say whether it's the assessor or the taxpayer being a governmental error, so either one could...
No, it says that the taxpayer claiming that the county made an error or omission in determining taxes owed may submit a written request for a refund of penalties, interest, or taxes to the county commissioner or governing body of the county. So they can make the application to you and say, in fact, it was a governmental error, and then you can make a determination. But there are going to be situations in which it wasn't a governmental error, and your determination is going to be the same as the assessor's.
But who was you? Who was you were talking about?
The county commission.
Okay.
So you're saying they should come to the commission or don't come to the commission?
Under the statute, they should obviously come to the commission and say it was a governmental error, but there's going to be situations where they filled out their own personal property form and got it wrong.
And
he's going to say it's not governmental error, and if you're going by the facts, you're going to say it's not governmental error.
Why don't we just bring those people, if there's a conflict, before the BOE? And then the BOE will determine if it's governmental error or not.
That's what I'm saying. BOE's position seems to be to determine
as
a fact. There.
Because the statute I hear Bob saying says to go to the commission, A, that's what it says, and then B, the commission meets once a week, and it doesn't hold the taxpayer up so long.
But that's only, we're only talking about specifically when the assessor doesn't want to write the abatement because he doesn't believe it's a governmental error. If it's governmental error, he'll write it, route to the commission. I'm just saying that on those cases where the assessor doesn't feel like it's to write it.
It doesn't matter to me. I'm just...
We're giving the citizen an out, basically. If James says it's a governmental error, he writes the abatement.
We bring
it to you guys for regular business. You make the decision, yes or no. We process it.
Right.
If you vote no, you guys have to determine if you want to have that come before BOE, or that's the no, or the other issue would be, and there are occasions where James, the collector, will bring an issue that she believes a taxpayer is... needed to have it done on occasion. Sometimes it appears that there was an error made, whether it was the citizens or James, and that has to have an out. So either that goes before the commission because it's personal property or something. There has to be a resolve to that, Bob.
There's a multitude of case law that, I mean, there have been entities that put down on their forms that they filled out themselves, and the cases have said, well, you made the mistake, it's your problem. Now, is that right? I can hear Chuck right now saying, that's not right. They're paying too much taxes because they put down the wrong vehicle.
Right.
It was their mistake. It's their fault. Maybe they should have.
So it's not governmental error, though.
But it's not right. It's not governmental error. Do you want to correct that? I can't find any authority in the statutes to correct that. Now, I know other counties do. And I'm not saying that... You know, I'm just telling you, I don't know what any statutory
I think you're changing. We changed subject for a second.
Yeah, we did.
Let's stay focused to governmental error.
And the statute's application of what you do with governmental error.
Right. So government error, if I'm hearing everyone, if James writes the abatement, which means that would then route to the county commission. Mm-hmm. If the county commission says yes, it's done. If the county commission says no, is that the appeal process to the state tax commission, or what do they do if the commission said no?
I think you can appeal. It doesn't say state tax commission in the statute. It's a brand new statute. I assume that any decision of the county commission that's quasi-judicial in manner is, by the administrative rules, appealable to the circuit court.
Circuit court.
That's right.
Sheila, do you want to add something?
She's got her mouth wide open in astonishment.
We're keep going back to that statute, 52-230, and I know what that was written for, and I can bring it up when we meet the legislation, because I think one word got put in there that didn't mean to be, and that's
taxes.
That had to do strictly with penalty standards. But anyway, we're all here to just get what's right, to get the taxpayer bill correct. Then not pay the entities any more than they owe, and not pay what they don't owe.
But we're doing one now. We need to get the book correct for you.
Yes. So the assessor. So you've made the decision on the unpaid bills. On the paid bills, the assessor's personal property division does very good investigative work in knowing where they go to find out the correct answer. And if the customer has paid a tax bill, and they find out that it's on the wrong vehicle, and we're talking not business personal property, we're just talking individual personal property, anything that deals with vehicles. There's so much documentation out there to find out if it was right or wrong. And the assessor's personal property division checks that. They have, and there's statutes that I have that if they cover, you do not double taxation. They do not pay in another county, another state, and they have evidence of that. You can get that through the web also, or the customer bring it in. So if the customer has made the error, or the assessor's office made a clerical error, and the customer's paid wrong, and there's evidence, and the assessor's office sees it, whether there's customer error or assessment error, then the assessor's office agrees, and they write their abatement, they take care of that customer. Gary and I just spoke this morning that we're going to have a problem on the assessment form where it prints your last year's vehicles. Then the customer, if it has the wrong year, and this year you corrected it, say they had a 2005 Oldsmobile, and it should have been a 2004 or 2006, and it has went through and been abated this year, been corrected, And but that assessment form that goes out this year is going to show that 2005 that was on there from the incorrect way. So if the customer, I guess you could say that's a customer in error, I don't know. If the customer doesn't look at that and catch that vehicle again, we're going to have that come up again. But it's easy to look in the state database and see
right.
what it should have been. So, I mean, I'm just saying we take care if it's a, if they pay the tax bill and whether we made the error or the customer there and you see that it was a mistake, and the assessor agrees that you go ahead and
so you're not talking so much refund. You're just talking about fixing
the refund.
She's talking about refund. She's talking about everything. She's saying if it's right, it's right. They should pay on what they owned. And the key to the whole thing is the assessor and the collector cooperating on this and the collector's books getting corrected.
Okay, so let's just make...
Don't ask for lawful authority.
Let me ask you a different question here. Let's just assume that that takes care of 95% of the problems. That the refund, if the assessor... says it needs to be done, it's the right thing to do, he writes the abatement, those all work fine, and I think that it just happens in the back between the office, that way the citizen, it's a faster process.
Yes.
What's the process then for those situations where an abatement doesn't get written, or the abatement's written, because James writes the abatements, but he may not be agreeable to it. Is that right?
Well, I
suggest the commission look at it.
I think what you're saying is, if I can clarify that, you're saying what do we do in the cases where the customer or the taxpayer thinks there's been a governmental error and the assessor or whatever department of government thinks there has not been a governmental error? The statute, if you read the statute, it assumes that if there is a governmental error, it's going to be universally recognized as a governmental error.
Right.
It doesn't really speak to the situation where there's a dispute as to whether it's a governmental error or not. So it doesn't really say who decides. Who's the final authority on deciding whether it is or is not a government?
If I put it down wrong on my personal property form and the government didn't check it and find out that I'm wrong.
She was saying that there's all kinds of case law and procedures and stuff as to, you know, did they write it down wrong or did they interpret it wrong or did they do this, as to whether that's an error or not. It sounds like what you're saying is what we do in the cases where there's a dispute between the taxpayer and the assessor
and I think
as
that,
to whether it is a governmental error.
I think most times there's not going to be a dispute if it's even a close call. I think the assessor is probably in his interest to say, in fact, let's just call it a government.
I would think that those situations would come for the BOA.
Well, it's pretty cut and dried if somebody comes in, I mean, by looking at the state motor vehicle database. I mean, it'd be cut and dried as to whether it's a mistake or not. No matter who made the mistake, I think it'll be corrected. But the only thing I see that I come in, now the people that don't owe any taxes because they didn't pay 1 year and wait till the next year till the license come due, we've already decided that. But if I pay my tax bill this last November when I got it, and then my license comes due this next year, right in December, and I got my November tax bill, and I realized that I did pay the 1 year, and it was the wrong vehicle, and I paid too much, you know, the question comes in, should they get a refund, you know?
If it was their fault, should they get a refund?
If it was their fault, or should they not? And that's the case I see we're kind of not being able to address here. That would be the only thing. I mean, most of it is pretty well cut and dried.
Go ahead.
Can we finish on agreeing that if the assessor writes... refund saying it is a governmental error, that one, the commission is the one who votes on it, and then two, we need to know how many years are we going to go back?
Three years.
Why three?
That's what I'm saying. Why three? Because Bob has brought up that it should be one.
Well,
every county, you asked for first-class counties. I got it from third and all over.
Right.
Every first-class county in the state except for Cole County goes back 3 years.
But what if we go by the law rather than what the other...
Buchanan goes back 1 year. Buchanan and Camden go back 1 year automatic and on their own without, and then they go to the commission. Camden goes into the commission if it's a year that wasn't paid in the current year. They go back if it's 2009 and they paid 2008 and 2009, they go into doing it again. But if it's paid in another year,
you don't... you don't need to straighten out 3 years ago for your two-year tags.
People in the normal course of their lives aren't discovering these errors until the second year.
Right.
So just setting a one-year limit is kind of...
But to go back 3 years, there's...
a statute that says you can go back 3 years.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
There's a statute that says you can go back 3 years in the event that there is an erroneous levy or an erroneous payment. It's not governmental error. That's not what it says.
Erroneous payment?
Isn't that what a governmental error is?
Okay.
No, he said that...
I've discussed this so many times that they've limited it down so much that basically if you pay the wrong amount of tax because they put the wrong school on there and it was the wrong levy, in very few other situations, almost none, does that statute even apply. So when you say there is a statute that says 3 years, yes, there is, but no, there's not. It doesn't apply.
Cindy did not hear that, Bob, and because she's going to deal with these taxpayers, would you say that one more time, that the levy, that applies to the levy, and the levy is what we work on and enter into the computer system. That has nothing to do with the taxes.
I read this earlier, 139.031, and it says, for any real or personal property tax mistakenly or erroneously levied against the taxpayer and collected in whole or in part by the collector, such application shall be filed within 3 years after the tax is mistakenly or erroneously paid.
Go back that third year. It's going to be mainly
2 years.
When you go to get that car tag, unless you're late in getting your car tag and maybe it was due in December and they're just now able to get it.
You'd have to be real late.
If I understand this specifically, that speaks to allowing you to go back 3 years. The county government assesses somebody, and then they levy a tax on the assessment. And it sounds like that allows them to refund if they make a mistake in how they levy the tax, but not necessarily in how they calculate the assessment. Correct? Missing something here?
I'd have to go through all of the case law with you, and I'd be happy to do that.
No, I'm not really inclined to do that. I'm just
basically saying, the only time...
My question is the law making the distinction between that kind of error? Saying you can rebate for one but not the other.
My memory, and it's not real bad, is that basically it's an erroneous levy situation, misapplication of the levy, not on the assessment side.
So if the guy put down the wrong vehicle and it got assessed, and if they applied the correct levy to him, we don't really have statutory authority to go back and correct that kind of error.
The courts have not recognized that situation as one that you can get a refund under 139.031.
Okay.
So I said it a little differently for a reason, but... similar to what you just said.
Okay. So we still need to know then, Jim, whether it's 1 or 3 years.
Gentlemen?
Or two.
One, two, or three. Let's have some suggestions from the board.
I'd still argue for three if Sheila's right that it very seldom happens anyway.
I think we're going to do two anyway.
And we're going to have to do two anyway, so it just makes
sense. I'm fine with three. You fine with three, Danny? Give me a nod or no nod.
On the levy deal, I think that's an individual case that comes before us. I think two is what we use for everything,
okay.
And three on special cases.
So your suggestion is 2 years, and if it's a 3 year, then it comes before
us.
The DOE.
That's my recommendation, because you're saying it's so limited.
That's my understanding of what he's saying.
It's so limited.
Yeah. Okay.
Why do we want to take a 3 year on
just as policy?
As a policy, whenever it's so limited that it doesn't apply.
Dave, what's your thoughts? 2 years with a third year come before the BOE?
Okay. Before you decide on that, let me give you a scenario of what happened to me last November when I went to pay my tags. It was the year 2009. I went to pay my tags. And they did not want my 2009 tax bill. They wanted my 2007 and 2008. At that time, if I had found an error, which I didn't, that would have been the time to find the error because I took
it. In the 2007.
2007 and 2000 would have been the 3 years. Not that I'm in support of the 3 years, but that's what happens if you have...
How rare is that, though?
We have quite a few.
I bet that happens a lot.
Because they don't discover it until they go and pay... for their tags if they're doing a two-year tag.
I'm just checking.
Once again, if that's a county error, if we did it, if we can see the evidence and this bill, because if she came in then, if she had it in November and came, it would have been 2 years then, would it not? It was 2009.
Yeah, the 2009 taxes were not charged.
But anyway, if it's a third year, it's going to be something that we have
not caught on her assessment form. It's there's just so much documentation there for personal property on vehicles that we can do and just get it corrected. Like we have one right now, an abatement there that the lady is waiting. She got a little hostile on, maybe unjustifiably, because the abatement was just written like the 25th of February or something. But the reason is, I think her car tags are due. She had paid a couple hundred dollars or so. Her car tags are due Friday, and that bill's in there, and she's got to pay it before she can go get those car tags. So she's waiting on that refund so that I can pay this other bill so she can take it to get her car tags. James, that's the reason for all this, just to take care of the people.
James wanted me to point out that the refunds under 52-240, where they were going to come from, and 52-240 specifically refers to subsection 6 of 139031, which says that all the county collectors of taxes in the city not with a refund or credit against the taxpayer's tax liability in the following year and subsequent consecutive taxable years until the taxpayers receive credit in full for any real or personal property tax mistaken or erroneously levied. So basically it is reimbursed by credits against future tax liability under 52-240. It refers to subsection 6 of 139031, so that's how it would be refunded. It wouldn't be refunded out of GCR. That's what James wanted me to speak to that.
It refunded in credits?
We don't refund out of GCR. We do not refund out of GCR.
Okay. So we're all in agreement with that.
If the assessor's office makes a mistake, and when the customer comes in, they owe more money, they have to pay it.
Correct.
If the taxpayer makes a mistake and they paid too much money, then by the same token, why shouldn't they be given the money back?
Well, I think they can if they just flat out paid too much money and it was more than the bill, but that's not going to happen. If they paid too much money because there was a mistake made that they made, then, you know, you can do what you want, I guess, but, I mean, that's not covered in 52. If you make the mistake... That's not a 52-240 correction.
Okay.
Well,
yeah. Let's stay on the government.
I want to know 1, 2, or 3 years is really where the discussion, the question on the table was.
I agree with Danny on the 2 years.
2 years. I mean, I just want to keep on knocking out 2 years, and then the third.
Danny, as I understand, Danny, 2 years on policy, 3 years they come before BOE.
The third year they come before BOE.
Yeah, that's why I'd like to have.
Okay, I'm good with that. I think I'm getting nods from everybody. Yep, so that's what it'll be.
So until such time as they actually come up with statutes to give us...
Until they really
clarify their own statutes.
No, State Tax Commission said take care of your people.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they generally say. They say just take care of it.
And that's what all these people say. Take care of your people.
They're saying in the absence
do
of actual clarification of statute...
Just take care of it.
We can make our own laws.
And I'll just say, my hope for this whole policy is that everything happens so much faster on the majority of everything. That way they don't have to wait. And then these odd cases, they come before us because it's horrible that they have to wait weeks upon weeks. Okay, we're down now to what happens. I'm going to try to just generalize here. Mm-hmm. What happens if the assessor just doesn't want to write the abatement because he doesn't feel it's right? At that point, do they come before the commission, or do they come before the BOE?
If they say it's governmental error, they come before the commission.
Okay.
Well, if it's governmental error, the assessor will write the abatement.
Right, but if they say it's a governmental error and the assessor disagrees,
then their recourse is the county commission.
Got that?
So the final word is commission.
And the commission's going to approve all of what the assessor does. He's going to say, this was governmental error, and you're going to say, okay, we agree that in the following cases there was governmental error, and you just take care of it as a commission.
Okay.
But he takes care of it in advance, which, I mean, you're going to be trusting him that he does a good job taking care of what's governmental error, but why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which sounds good.
So people trust him or they wouldn't have him there.
That's right.
So the commission resolves a dispute between customer and assessor as to whether it's a government letter.
All right. What's next then, Donna? Give me.
I think we've taken care of whether if James doesn't write it, the citizen still has an out to come before the commission. Can you think of another one?
Well, we just haven't dealt with what if it's the taxpayer's fault.
Yes, taxpayer's
and
fault.
And not the government's fault, and they've overpaid. I mean, you're obviously going to correct.
Same thing.
You're going to correct the problem as far as the year on the car, but what about a refund?
Right.
Same thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If the county can, I mean, if we can correct it because the county made a mistake, then why can't we correct it because the customer James. Made a mistake? I think they ought to be
James.
Refunded.
James. Makes sense to me. Cindy?
Well, well, I can tell you legally why you wouldn't, but you don't want to hear that.
No, I do want to hear that.
I asked Cindy a question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Technically, what you're saying then is that the only time the BOE would hear any kind of a personal property issue then would be if it was for a refund where it went back 3 years. Is that correct then?
That's what he's saying.
And well, you say BOE or County Commission?
Now, what
I
about
BOE?
BOE will only
if
hear
it
a case.
Goes back 3 years.
That would be the only time a personal
from
property.
From 2 to 3 year process.
Now, what about personal property other than licensed vehicles where we have a clear remedy by going to the state vehicle department, you know, and finding that? What about a business property and things?
We haven't got there yet.
Yeah,
well, I mean, we're saying personal property here, though. We need to clarify.
Right. Which we're not talking cattle.
Yeah, no business expense.
No business yet.
Okay, just strictly vehicle is what we've discussed.
So basically the question is that Jim has asked is taxpayers, if it's the taxpayer's fault, are we going to consider a refund? Yes or no? And Bob has indicated no.
Bob said no.
I didn't say no. The statute says...
Bob says it's paid that the statute applies to.
But you also said we have a right to do anything we want.
Yep.
I didn't say you had a right. I said the State Tax Commission told you that just take care of it.
If I understand this 52-240, it only gives us the authority to go back for 3 years if it is a governmental error.
Correct.
Do I understand that?
I'm looking at... No, I don't see 3 years, but...
or whatever...
Anytime.
It references 139.031 subsection 6 where it says...
As far as refunds.
Refunds.
Okay.
It talks about governmental error. You can go to the county commission.
Okay.
And as she said, it was originally written, they shouldn't have put taxes in but
there.
They did.
That's a shall statement, and it's referring to penalties and interest. Now, but we'll work on that.
What statutory authority do we have if it's not a governmental error, if it's a taxpayer error? Is there any authority anywhere that allows us to go back 3 years?
Statutorily, Bob.
I haven't found any. But
so,
is there anything that actually precludes us from going back? I mean, how far are we allowed to go back?
The Dillon Law.
Huh?
3 years is all personal property does.
Well, 139.031, in the event that there's an erroneous levy, you can go back 3 years, and they increase that. But that doesn't necessarily apply to this. I don't see anything that says you can go back more than 3 years.
So they're
outlawed after 3 years.
That's what
I was going
to say. 3 years is all personal property deals
with.
Well,
it sounds like 3 years is the brick wall no matter what.
Right.
You can't even collect something that's more than 3 years old because it's been outlawed already.
Refund-wise, citizen error, refund.
Refund-wise. Okay. If I understand, if there's no statutory authority to go back at all, which means if the guy makes an error filling out his form,
We can fix the form, but we don't have to refund the money. Is that correct?
Fix the form, you don't. Yeah, you're. If I understand the legalities of it, they haven't given us the authority to even fix it.
Well, there's a practical problem. You have to fix the form so that they can get licensed. I don't know that we would even have to do that under the statute until somebody told us we did. But it's the right thing to do.
If they've already paid taxes based on their error on an erroneously filled out form, it sounds like you're saying there's no statutory authority to refund in that if it's a taxpayer error.
That's
Can I ask a
You can comment? Show me where it is. I'll tell you that...
You're saying there is no statutory authority.
I have not found any. I don't believe there is
okay.
any.
Okay, Sheila?
Do you feel you should be taxed twice? If you pay on a 2008 Lincoln and... If you pay on a 2007 Lincoln, you go to the License Bureau and it's a 2008 Lincoln, the Department of Revenue is going to make you pay taxes on the 2008 Lincoln. Do you feel you should have had to pay on that 2007? It was your error, you put it down, or you should you get your money back?
Well, they wouldn't get any money back. They'd pay the difference between the 2007 and 2008.
And they'd be asking for a refund would be the difference. I mean, basically, what they, if they overpay, they overpaid the difference between the two, and that's all that they would get back. Is it right that they have to pay a tax that's more than they should have had to pay had they filled it out right? If I don't take all my deductions on my income tax, I'm going to pay more than I should have,
okay,
too.
Pause. How have we done it in the past regarding this conversation? Do we normally refund them?
I thought that we charged the difference between the 2007 and the 2008, Sheila.
The answer is we normally refund them.
Okay, we normally refund. Is that how I thought it, too? Chuck, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
My train changed tracks, but it makes sense to go ahead and do it to me.
Okay. Yeah. I'm getting a nod. Okay, so.
What is it?
It makes practical sense.
Refund.
It makes practical sense.
Wow. And that's all the legal counselor.
We have about the minutes from Mr. Paul. No, I'm just
so
he said that word?
Yeah.
Practical sense, not...
So refunds for taxpayers, that's their fault. We're going to go back so many years.
We might just throw it in the same governmental air bucket and say 2 years, and the third year they come before the commission, the BOE.
And otherwise it goes before the commission. It would
be a lot easier to just recognize it all as governmental error.
Because about 99% of the time we're not talking about very few dollars.
No.
If there's a mistake and the assessor had it wrong, it would be a lot easier just to call it governmental error.
Okay, so... I believe that may conclude all of the personal property
licensed
vehicles,
not commercial.
Right.
No, I don't really.
Or you mean not? Yeah.
Okay. Could we clarify? Because you just mentioned it, commercial, but don't we want to designate that this is vehicles and not bring up commercial or? Because we have commercial businesses, vehicle problems.
We sure don't want people coming in with cattle saying, I didn't have that many cattle 2 years ago on January 1st.
So all this discussion we've had is concerning vehicles, whether they're commercial
or business.
Business or residential.
You agree with that? I mean, it's vehicles are vehicles.
Right. But I'm not,
like
we're not finished.
We're getting other things.
Okay, with vehicles?
We're not finished with vehicles.
Okay, we're not finished with vehicles.
Is it all right? Before we go to something else,
yeah.
Is it all right to,
that's,
to,
well, you can
to
specify
clarify
vehicles,
that this is vehicles?
But okay. We're not finished with it.
Okay.
Burns my hind end, and I know we're on tape, that we had a gentleman, a taxpayer, come in here last year or 2 years ago and lie to us like a dog for a 2-year refund, and actually had to send the assessor over to investigate and found out that he had lied.
He won't write the abatement then.
Yeah. That would come under your, what
he
you guys said.
He won't write the abatement for it then.
So that process would, he would not write the abatement.
He come in for the refund though.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But you remember what one we're talking about?
Yes.
The motor home at Hollister.
RV that
never been in the state.
RV that was in California.
Which I'm going to suggest then, because his staff wrote that abatement, but James didn't review it, so... If we're going to go with putting it on the assessor, it should be on the assessor, not on assessor staff.
Correct. So he needs to be able to stamp them or something.
James needs to be able to review.
Should we require any form that the taxpayer, when they're getting their vehicle licensed, fills out, you know, something like
well,
they do
line
with the original property
If he wouldn't
form.
Have done it, it would have gone to the BOE.
It was before the BOE.
Right, but I mean... The process that we are talking about, in this situation, he would have been forced to come to the BOE, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because James the assessor didn't agree with the governmental error. So at that point, then that person still would have come to the BOE.
not on personal property. I thought you guys said all that went to the
That's condition. Vehicle, isn't it?
Well, but the thing is, if the assessor doesn't write the abatement or doesn't agree with the abatement, those individuals still come before the BOE, correct?
No, you said assessor not writing and doesn't say that it's a governmental error, then it goes before the commission.
Goes before the commission. Okay, so I'm sorry.
That's the what we decided on.
Yeah, Bob?
There's a form that you fill out, personal property. We've all filled one out. At the bottom it says, under penalty of perjury, I say this is correct, basically.
That's the enforcement on it.
Well, when you come in later and say, well, no, it's not correct, there's no form that you have to fill out that says under penalty of perjury, I'm saying this is my new statement. Should there be some sort of form that you fill out when you're asking for the abatement that says under the penalty of perjury?
We have a copy for
an application.
Do you do it?
No, but we have a copy if we want to.
It might be a good idea to do that.
Cindy?
A lot of the counties have an application, basically, that they, if you want a refund, you have to fill out this application. And we have some examples from other counties of theirs. And even one of the statutes, and maybe I'm off again, but it says, you know, the taxpayer shall apply for a refund, basically.
Yeah.
I have no problem with a refund form.
I don't either. Puts their John Hancock.
And put something in with the perjury, something.
That's what it says right here.
Right.
By written request.
Okay.
By written request.
So they make a written request that says, under penalty of perjury, I say this to be accurate. So you don't have somebody lying about their vehicles. I bring it up because...
I think
it just
that's
says
a good
written
point.
Request, which means they can write a letter or we can provide them a form.
Right.
One or the other.
Right.
If they don't want to write a letter, we have a form where they can fill in the blank.
Right.
Yeah. And we'll put under penalty of perjury on there, just like it is on the personal property form, so that...
Do we enforce that then, Bob?
Well, I think we need to.
I think that, I mean, do we turn that over to the prosecutor and the prosecutor?
Well, the assessor in Christian County found out that when you make claims to the insurance company and you didn't fill out your personal property forms correctly, you can actually get in trouble, so...
I think we do. I think... Once we go through this process, we do enforce that.
Well, that old boy ended up not paying any taxes in California, and he ended up not paying any taxes here.
No, and we denied it, remember, right at the end we found out.
So he did have to pay it in Missouri.
He paid him in Missouri.
Did he actually pay him?
I found it there in the driveway. We went back.
He lives here pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. So I think that situation gets resolved, though, with the policy.
Okay.
So vehicles, both commercial or non-commercial, vehicles, that's our vehicle policy.
Any licensable vehicle.
Licensable vehicle. Let's put it that way. Thank you for that clarification.
Success.
I just feel like I want to take a break. I mean, call it a day, but we're not done yet, are we?
Not easy, but we got it.
Okay.
So business, not commercial.
Business property. No. Unlicensable. Yes, Sheila. You want to say something?
Business. We're talking about vehicles.
Get early.
Because you can have business vehicles.
James asked, why would we distinguish between vehicles and other personal property?
Well, I kind of question that myself.
Well, the business personal property is between the assessor, something that we don't have anything to do with. The assessor has, the taxpayer fills that form out with the assessor, and he would have to determine whether the assessed value of that business personal property is right. If they apply for a refund, that would be something the assessor would have to check out on his end. It's nothing that...
And all these abatements we're talking about have been vehicles, right?
And all
Isn't
these,
that right, James?
All
no.
We have
no, it's not.
We had a big case last year with MPI that wanted to split a tax bill. And
on their graders or something.
That they wanted to sell. And these are huge dollars. These are not
equipment, airplanes, boats.
Airplanes is one, yeah.
Airplanes, boats.
We have bulldozers and backhoes and all that.
So
it can get pretty substantial.
Yeah.
And the distinction between vehicles and stuff is the process by which people discover that they've made an error is going to be when they go get their license. And there's...
The other people just absorb it.
The other people...
If you don't know the truth.
Right.
They just absorb it.
Yeah, which is what I've always done. But...
With the hiring and firing of secretaries in commercial business, you stand a higher risk of being over-assessed on business personal than anything else.
And you don't go into the license bureau and look at your thing and discover you made an error. You don't discover it until, years later, you look and think, well,
what the hell, you know. The biggest refund that will come out of here is Ms. Persons.
Okay, so.
Because if a person wrote down what they paid for that business instead of separating their business person, and they paid it for 2 or 3 years.
Right. So what should we do?
Well, if James has a concern on business personal property, why don't we just classify that as an issue that comes before BOE because it takes quite a bit of discussion, would you say?
I mean, what we're trying to do is streamline the policy.
We're trying to get 90% of everything just cleaned up without it, them having to wait.
Right. Yeah, but some of those James things can't be.
Right, and those things didn't come from BOE.
Could we say that if it's something that's very obvious and the assessor agrees that they could... he could write an abatement and go on, and if the assessor doesn't, then it comes to the BOE.
Sure.
It sounds like it's a determination of fact as to what the actual...
I don't think there are that many business property situations that come before BOE. It's almost all vehicles.
Well, then, if that's not the case, then all of those should just come before us.
What?
No, but the ones... Well, Kohl's department store, okay. Well, we settled that one.
It sounds like the ones that do come up end up being like MPI and Kohl's.
They're usually more complicated.
Yeah.
They're complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like it's up to the assessor to make the determination of the fact. If the taxpayer has a dispute with his determination, they have the recourse to
motels come into it because they buy a motel and give a price for it. And then have to...
Break it apart.
And they say, well, if we have to, you know, we're paying on the price we paid for the motel, but yet part of it was personal property, and now we got to do that. We're paying double taxation. We have some arguments over that one.
So then do we want to change the section where we say the assessor doesn't want to write it, that it goes, all of those go before BOE, and that would... Maybe be his.
No. I mean, if they're saying it's a governmental error, it still needs under 52-240 to go in front of the county commission.
Okay. Okay.
But
so what are we saying?
Motor vehicles.
Right.
So we're saying a commercial personal property. If the assessor basically once again deems it refunded, it goes to the commission. Is that not true? And if it doesn't, it comes before the... Who does it go before if it's... if he doesn't, for lack of a better word, doesn't want to write the abatement, who...
Well, that's up to you guys because...
Is it the commission or is it BOE?
You're dealing with the other issues, and if he doesn't want to do a vehicle that he disagrees with the citizen on, you're still taking that before the commission, so why wouldn't you go ahead and take your commercial property before the commission?
I think you would. I think we just do it the same way.
It'd be easier on us.
I think it's just the same way. Just if there's a conflict of, I don't want to write the abatement, it comes before the commission, we're saying.
Yeah.
What does the BOE do a whole lot of them?
So the BOE, the only thing the BOE is going to be dealing with right now on personal property is anything, any request that's over 2 years. So any 3-year request of refund in personal property of any kind comes for BOE.
It sounds to me like the BOE is going to end up just meeting for summer BOE, which is the way it should be.
All the other counties operate.
You won't have to meet monthly unless there is a refund that's a 3-year, which those don't happen very often.
Or any kind
that's of. That's how it's supposed to be.
You know, you won't have to meet every month the BOE.
Oh, I like that already. Why don't you write, I think that's the policy. I think we should write it up and so we have it in writing and then we can vote on it our next and maybe last one for a while.
That'd be good. We'll write up the policy.
Can you write it up so we can see it? That way we make sure we didn't miss anything.
Okay. There'll be some things that
we'll email out to everybody so you have some time to
please,
come up with any questions.
Please. Yeah. And make sure James and Sheila both get a copy and Bob gets a copy. Let's do the litmus test here. Using the policy, go through this and tell us what we have to make a decision on. Anything?
Okay. Using this policy, of course, all these just zero...
They're taken care of.
Those are done. And these are refunds. Now, I have one for sure that would have to come...
It's a 3-year?
We haven't talked about. This is actually a real estate refund. James's office has written this refund request. These
all those
people...
come before BOE.
Yeah, all real estate comes from BOE, okay.
These people were double assessed on a residence. It was on two different parcels.
Oh, what BOE number? BOE number.
That's BOE number 2011-0031.
It's double assessment. That's erroneous, isn't it?
Yep. That's absolutely right. It'll be on your very last page.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion. Aye.
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 We're done.
All right. And then...
oh, by the way, just the motion did carry, by the way. And I called the vote and sprinkled the minutes that I was ahead of everyone yelling out aye.
We wanted to see how well it worked.
These are refund requests, and these are all with the year 2008 and 2009. So the way I understand that, then those would
next commission.
Those would go before the commission. Let's just do this.
Since the policy has not been approved, let's go ahead and approve those based off the policy. Or hear those real fast. Okay. Get it clear.
This number.
And once you read the numbers off, the third.
Okay.
Is there anything?
No, these all have good proof as to what the problem is. Now, I'm not going to say I've looked to determine whether or not it was assessor's office error or taxpayer error.
We didn't say that in the policy. Maybe they say it's government or citizen error is what we...
That's right. Yeah, that is true. That's true. Okay.
And if the assessor had no problem with it, then we have no problem with it. So read those numbers off it. Kelly, did I hear a motion for me? Motion to approve all these numbers?
Sure.
Kelly had made a motion to approve the numbers that Cindy's going to read out.
I'll second the motion.
Oh, Dave beat you to second.
Oh, shoot.
We won't read the numbers out.
All right. 2011-0002-0018-0018-0032-0032-0038-0053-0058. That's it.
All right, motion is on the floor and a second. All those in favor of approving those refunds say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Are all the other ones in just $0?
Yeah, all the rest are $0.
Okay. Is there anything else left to discuss?
Thank you guys for coming up with a policy to make this so much easier on all of our offices.
We will vote on the policy, or you're going to email it out. The next meeting we'll vote on it, and that may be the last one for a while.
Yeah.
All right, then anything else, board members?
I got a question. Why can't we vote on it now?
We don't see it in writing, and she could sneak something in there.
Oh.
Just to be sure we understood.
Erroneously typed.
Okay.
Or misunderstood, which would be easy to do.
Right. But we could do a phone vote, too.
Well, I was thinking if they got it written up and emailed it to all of us, and if everybody's acceptable with it,
if not,
then maybe we need to
meet again. It's all going to the commission anyway.
Especially as to motor vehicles, all you need is an efficient policy that helps the taxpayers that these two cooperate. And
how about we just follow Kelly there? Let's make a motion to approve it. And if there's something wrong with the writing, we'll look at it again or something. I don't know how to say that, but
I'd say just prove that we're going
to. We can motion to approve pending corrections and printing. Let's just email it out. We'll do a vote on it. We may do a vote email or an
action.
We'll just do it.
I think that's better. I'd feel better with having it written out before you look at.
Dave's got one thing.
Well, not having to do with this altogether, I just wonder, is there any way that the Department of Revenue information could be, when somebody goes in, let's say, and trades vehicles, and they put that in their little computer, that somehow that's transferred to the assessor's office? And, I mean, is that...
They look at that all the time. Most of these have that information attached to it. They look at the state records all the time to see what the person actually owned.
But in the course of an abatement.
Right, but David...
Well, right. I mean, if somebody comes in, but I'm saying it... just to...
No, I know where you're going, because if the assessor's office is in the process of entering that data into their computer, they've got to go by the affidavit that was just signed by that citizen. They can't look into the computer and go, oh, no, they did it wrong, and so we're going to just change it.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if people trade vehicles, Well, it wouldn't apply to January 1st, though, if they traded in July, so never mind. I'm just trying to think of a way that it'd be tied in easier on the assessor's office.
You know, it'd be a lot easier if they just collected the taxes when they relicensed their vehicles.
The database that the Department of Revenue's office supplies us is the database the Department of Revenue supplies the collectors is you type in your year, 2010, and it's any vehicle that was licensed on January 1st, 2010, then your name and all those vehicles with their VIN numbers, everything comes up. You put in 2009, and it gives you anything that was licensed on January 1st, 2009. And that's made to go with the statute that what they had licensed owned at that time. That's what's supplied to us.
But if we did that on an individual basis, we would have you a 2010 book, and we'd have it to you at 100% perfect. But we
would
give that to you in 2013.
Yeah.
Now, and that's government right there.
There's what James has always said, the honest man tax. If they come from Arkansas, your vehicle, they may have, and then they put it in Missouri, it's going to show when they actually purchased that vehicle, and but maybe they had it in another state, and that's when we have to just go with the honest man tax, wow. And I lived in.
Well, thanks.
One more quick one, if I could.
Yes.
Now that we've got this done, and James, do you review these abatements?
Some I do, some I don't. My personal property girl writes them and ships them on.
Sounds like you're probably.
I mean, since we're superseding the BOE process, you're probably going to have to.
I'll probably review.
Have to review them all now.
Yeah, I don't review. I mean, they might write 40 a day when they're catching up.
Right.
Sherry and Glenda. They like them in that department. They're very thorough.
Sounds like if they're a no-brainer, they're making the determination.
Yeah,
I mean, if there's a question, they'll pick it up to you.
Right. We good?
Good.
All right, adjourn.
What do we got now?
We finally got some decisions.
Sounds like
the state could solve all this if we had some legislation in order to solve it by just having taxes paid at the time that you register your vehicle.
You wouldn't have done until
we wouldn't have to worry about any of this.
That's why I say that's why California does. There's some things they do right.
So, very, very, very rare. But that's
oh, can we go back to administration?
Yeah, I'd like
hey, Dan, I need at least a 5 minute administration. At least I have 5 minutes of admin. When Chuck's got something too. You're going to stay there? That's not problem.